Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We join now on the line by our guest to help us unpack the dynamics, the challenges and the trends that we also happen to see within South Africa's construction sector, where activity has been weaker than expected in early 2024. We join now by economist Dr. Roelof Botha, who joins us to give us some insight into this research. Aangename kennis, meneer Botha.
Good evening.
It's a real pleasure to speak to you today, sir, and thank you so much for making time. Dr. Botha, this is an interesting sector. I remember a few years ago, maybe it was before the 2010 rush or just a few years after that, where anywhere you looked around the Sandton skyline, there would be a crane, and it was indicative of a buzzing and bustling construction sector in South Africa. That doesn't appear to be the case today, even according to your research.
There are certainly some in parts of the country, especially in the metros, where you would still find a crane or two. But they have become scarce. What the listeners must remember is that COVID changed a lot of things. So since a lot of people are working from home, although that could be a bit of an oxymoron in the case of some officials at Home Affairs, if I must say so, on a lighter note, obviously you see offices for rent signs all over the world, except, of course, in countries like Venezuela and Zimbabwe, because there's nobody that wants to rent anything. If you destroy free enterprise principles, if you destroy the constitutional safeguards for private property rights, your economy has had it. Schluss, as the Germans would say. But this is a universal problem that we have. In South Africa's case, of course, we still have free enterprise and private property rights protected in our constitution. It is the constitution that most accurately resembles the United Nations Charter on Human Rights. And quite frankly, I cannot understand how anybody in his right mind would want to change South Africa's constitution for that reason alone, and other reasons. But anyway, so what is happening in South Africa's case, because of a vibrant private sector, very innovative, many of these office buildings are being converted into residential apartments. Some of them are being converted into warehouses. Obviously, that requires some construction activity, which is actually happening. The additions and alterations to buildings since COVID has become a much larger component of a building and construction activity in South Africa. But we have a growing population, so at some point in time we need to see more cranes. I agree with you.
Definitely. I'm glad you've contextualized this, right? Because there's a lot that influences the lay of the landscape. It's the politics of the day that influence the policies to see businesses invest. It's the macroeconomic environment and whether we are seeing a vibrancy in investment from private sector, again, economic growth to stimulate this, and of course, jobs that are participating. But looking at your research, Dr. Botha, you do highlight that within the first quarter of this year, we did see a decline within South Africa's construction activity. Help us contextualize this, because there also are a few companies that you make reference to, like the likes of Afrimat, and how this shows the dynamics of the construction space in the country.
Yes, Afrimat, if we can just speak for Afrimat just for a minute or so. Afrimat is in a wonderful space because the CEO, Anders van Heeren, who is the JSE CEO of the Year, by the way, if I may brag a little bit on his behalf, he is a most brilliant man, and he has over many years diversified that company but into the resources sector, and they are actually listed currently under the resources sector, but they have a very, very strong element of construction activity, and their construction materials division of Afrimat and the bulk commodity segment have done exceptionally well. And one also sees that in the best performing indicator of the Afrimat construction index in the first quarter, which was wholesale trade sales for construction materials. And that is up 10%, more than 10% year on year in real terms. But unfortunately, except for employment as well, which is up marginally, The other 8 indicators that comprise this index are all negative, and that is a huge point of concern.
Let's talk about this concern further, because I'm also keen to understand the drivers behind this decline. And I alluded to some of the factors earlier on, the macroeconomic environment, inflationary pressures. But help us understand some of the other nuances that might be own goals that we keep scoring in South Africa.
Yes, if we could... If our soccer team could score as many real goals as our economy scores own goals, we would be on top of the world.
Right.
Not necessarily in Europe, because we're not a European country. We've got some splendid soccer to look forward to, of course. It's a sport bonanza right now for sports lovers with the T20 World Cup. Our cricket team are just frying my nerves a bit. But getting back to the economy,
sure.
the biggest obstacle to the growth in the construction sector and the further development of the sector is, without a shadow of doubt, is the high interest rates. We have one of the highest real interest rates in the world. By real interest rate, I mean your interest rate that you see in South Africa's case. It's the prime overdraft rate of the banks, which is 11.75%. You deduct the inflation rate, which is currently 5.2%, from that, and you end up with slightly more than 6.5% real interest rate after adjustment for inflation. That is one of the highest in the world. And that is absolutely crazy as far as I'm concerned. Because we do not have demand inflation in South Africa.
Oh, yes.
And the Monetary Policy Committee, the Reserve Bank, should have lowered interest rates long ago. As a matter of fact, they should never, ever have raised the interest rate to this level. It was only 10%, the prime rate, before COVID. Now it is 11.75. And unemployment is worse. It doesn't make any sense in macroeconomic policy terms. It is as if they only focus on inflation and they forget entirely about the dire need to create jobs in this country and to stimulate economic growth. And I've actually suggested to some senior people in the public sector that what they need to do is to expand the composition of the Monetary Policy Committee to also include economists from National Treasury and from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition and also from the private sector, and so that they can reach, you know, some verdict on this. And I'm convinced that if the Monetary Policy Committee were constituted as I've suggested, that this rate, this 11.75, would probably have been between 9% and 10%. And if I'd been governor, the rate would be 9%.
And how do you, debate the government's governor's argument around inflation? He mentions that it has been high. It has been on the upper end of their 3 to 6% target band. Last print, if I'm not mistaken, came out at what, 5.7%, 5.6%? Your thoughts on that, just to get your views on the economic and monetary policy stance that we have in South Africa this evening.
Okay, it's nonsensical. It is nonsensical because we do not have demand inflation. We have a target range for inflation, 3 to 6%. That means, effectively, that if inflation is in that target range, then you can also keep an eye on growth and job creation. And that was the case with the previous governor of the Reserve Bank, Jo Marcus, a brilliant lady. And during her tenure, the real prime rate, prime minus CPI, was just above 3%. It is now 6.5. In other words, more than 100% higher. The cost of capital in South Africa and the cost of credit is inhibitively high. On the average bond administered by Better Bond, homeowners are now paying 4,000 rand a month, every month more, for no good reason. I can tell you that the public opinion against these interest rates, that is, it is swelling. This is, it is really not a good idea to keep interest rates so high. There is no reason for that, because the CPI has been in the target range between 3 and 6% now for 11 successive months. But they refused lower interest rates. It defies any logic. And I'm not the only economist in South Africa. he's saying this.
You're right. I've heard the divergent views, Dr. Botha, with regard to the stance, the monetary policy stance that we have in South Africa. And of course, there are merits to your argument, especially given just the levels of inequality. And as you say, there's no demand inflation in South Africa. What I'm keen to get your views on, it does seem as though it's going to be a while until we do see any kind of interest rate cut taking place in the local economy. Does this still have unforeseen consequences on the construction sector specifically, given that you mentioned the high inflationary environment and interest rates does play an influence on investment here?
Well, yes, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait until July because for no particular reason, the Monetary Policy Committee only has a meeting to decide on interest rates every second month. Now, I just want the listeners to appreciate the fact that these are five individuals, right? We have 60 million people in South Africa. We have a couple of thousand economists in this country. And if they were to listen to our advice, they would have lowered interest rates long ago, and there's nothing. There's no law in South Africa which says that they must only meet every second month. Mm-hmm. The need for job creation in this country is such right now that they should actually have a special meeting tomorrow and lower the rates. And that can be done. It is, they just have simply too much power. Five individuals in this country have too much power over one of the most important, if not the most important, economic indicator in this country. And that is the rate of interest that you pay on your credit card and on your mortgage loan. And I really believe that the National Treasury and the government should have a discussion with the Monetary Policy Committee, and they should consider expanding this committee to also include economists, seasoned veterans, 25 years experience, at least a master's or a doctorate in economics, to also assist in deciding on this indicator, because we are on the wrong path here. We can start creating thousands of jobs within a month if they will just lower the interest rate. This gets me hot under the collar because there's no good reason for this higher rate. Nothing.
100%, I can tell. Really appreciate your thoughts and your insights, sir, Dr. Roelof, and of course, on the clarity of the concerns that are coming about here. On that note, given that you are an economist, you've been taking a look at the monetary policy stance. We can't ignore the influence of the elections, the political outcomes, which are still being deliberated, and what that could mean for South Africa's economic trajectory. I'm keen just to get your views here on not necessarily the intersection of politics and economics, but the rollout of policies that need to be effective to propel South Africa's economic growth.
Yes, well-formulated question. You've all obviously done your homework.
And I
get the impression that you understand economics.
If you were my student,
I'd give you an A.
Thank you, Dr. Botha.
At this point in time. But yes, there are contrasting views obviously on this issue. Myself, I believe that the Government of National Unity, which is about to be formed, will consist of political parties that want to protect the Constitution and protect the principle of private property rights as it should be done, and that they will continue on the road that we have started on, and that is closer cooperation between the public sector and the private sector, especially via vehicles such as the National Logistics Crisis Committee. We have already seen some progress in this regard. The fact is that the two worst harbors in the world, out of more than 400, are both in South Africa. Mm-hmm. This can be fixed. If with the right policies, with closer cooperation between the public and the private sectors, in terms of identifying the problem areas and fixing that mainly with skills, and obviously with some improvements to maintenance and expansion, that we could move up those rankings very fast, and in the process, obviously, stimulate construction. I believe, personally, that a combination of lower interest rates, which could happen in July anyway, mm-hmm. With this new partnership approach, could propel construction and the economy forward from the second half of this year, and we could even maybe touch on 3% growth next year.
Oh, That would be wonderful. It would be needed. And of course, stimulating a sense of employment that we need in our unequal society. Dr. Buerta, such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I could listen and sit in your lecture classes all day. Thank you so much for indulging me and educating myself and the listeners too. Ons waardeerde baie.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you so much. That is Dr. Roelof Buerta, who joins us this evening. And as you heard, we started off really giving some context around the South African construction activity that we saw in the first quarter. And Dr. Buerta has contextualized, it is waning. We are seeing that there has been a drag in the level of activity in the construction space, largely because of the costs, high interest rates and inflation. And he helped us understand the positioning and the stance of the MPC, and that perhaps, in his view, they're not on the right track, because inflation is not demand-led. In other words, it's not driven by you and I and our heightened appetite for spending. If anything, we need the relief so that we can just get by to pay petrol, to pay for transport, to pay for the food that we need and our accommodation. And of course, given us a better understanding of the complexities of politics, economics, there's a great intersection and inflection point there where the two have a strong influence on each other. So we can't ignore the political developments that continue to take place in South Africa, in other emerging states like India. President Modi there also didn't get a majority vote within his government and is also going through coalition talks. Mexico itself has seen an interesting change in shifting dynamics of power, but also no clear outright majority winner. So all of these economies that we are viewed as peers with in the international community are all facing this change that we witness within their democracies. And that plays an influence on their policies that they influence. The policies play an influence on the economic outcomes that we achieve. The economic outcomes also speak to the growth, the trade relations, the partnerships, BRICS, and many other relationships that we forge with some of our peers. So when you look at things, understand that it's all interconnected. It's like a web of opportunities and, of course, intricacies that often do have an interplay in and on each other. As I always say, business isn't boring.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.